for launch in 3, 2, 1.
Go.
This is a dangerous group that we're dealing with now.
Introducing the Dog Pound Daily Podcast with your hosts, Andrew Seipt.
I must be louder.
And site expert Steven Kubica.
If it's a blowout, Monday's podcast is going to be a bummer. But if they win, it's going to be a party.
This DJ's so funky, man.
Okay, let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Friday edition of the Dog Pound Daily Podcast. I know last week we mentioned that we probably would take a week off because it was the Browns bye week and we didn't think that there would be any bombshell news, but lo and behold, the Browns have outdone themselves this week. We've got Jimmy Garoppolo news, the trade deadline debacle, as well as Josh Gordon being reinstated, but I think what we need to talk about first is that the Browns are once again, or I guess continuously, the laughingstock of the league for multiple reasons. We've drafted a 28-year-old rookie quarterback before. We've had a quarterback dress up in a wig and glasses and go to Vegas on the last day of the season. We've even had a wide receiver show up to the tarmac half drunk before a game and then not be allowed on that plane. But I think the last 24 hours or last 48 hours really should hopefully be rock bottom for this franchise. Sorry for the starting of the monologue here. I'm joined by my co-host, Steven Kubica. Steven, what are your thoughts on what's transpired over the last 48 hours?
Well, I feel foolish because jokingly on our Monday post-game podcast, I said, what's it going to take to do an emergency pod? Josh Gordon getting reinstated? Sashi Brown doing something horrible? Hugh Jackson getting fired? And then rapid fire. I feel like the Browns are like a political administration where it's like, all right, wait, a bad story, what now? Oh, Josh Gordon, we can reinstate Josh Gordon, cover up the other
just
news.
Divert the attention, divert their attention,
and that's
pick
how
up something
it was.
Else.
It was, the Garoppolo news wasn't really something the Browns did, it was more something they didn't do. But then that led to open, not fights, but open angst between the coaches and the front office, and then 2 hours later, Hugh Jackson's daughter's tweeting at Mike Silver, and then she makes her account private, and then they try to trade for AJ McCarron.
It opened the floodgates, basically, right? And you mentioned it. I mean, Hugh Jackson's daughter is tweeting at Mike Silver. Mike Silver is obviously the mouthpiece for Hugh Jackson, saying how, you know, he doesn't make any of the calls, that the front office is in charge of all of this, and it's almost like he's kind of saving his ass, don't you think?
I agree, and I was thinking of something funny. Other site co-expert Tom Moore in our site chat, some people were talking about what was going on, and there was just nothing from Tom, and then out of nowhere, it was like just this so angry at Hugh Jackson for putting these stories in the media, because you know he is, or someone in the coaching staff, because who is, like, is the janitor, like, deep undercover, like, Sashi Brown left at 5 o'clock?
Yeah. Speaking of that, it's a perfect segue. After the Garoppolo news broke, I believe it was around 10 p.m. on, was it Tuesday night, Wednesday night?
Well, the Garoppolo news, I believe, was during Monday Night Football.
It was Monday Night Football. You're right. So everyone gets the alert that Garoppolo's traded for a second-round pick. In the offseason, we had discussed, you know, what it might take to get a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo away from the Patriots. You look at a team like San Francisco that either has made the realization that this quarterback class is not as good as first advertised, which seems to be the case every year, and they go out and get their guy that they think can win right now, or at least win a few games. They're sick of being winless. You look at a team like the Browns, almost like asleep at the wheel. You know, we had some Benjamin Albright emails stating that the coaches were there working late into the trade deadline, whereas the front office is going home by 5 p.m., you know, and that's just not a good look for a franchise already as bad as the Browns.
It's weird, too, because there is also the point of, if Sashi Brown's home, he's still working. But it is bad because it's the trade deadline. So at the start of free agency and the end of the trade deadline when it hits, you got to be working. Or at least you got to be at the facility.
Yeah, you're supposed to be there with your coaches, because there could be players that are off the radar for both of them, you know, that maybe become available, and you need it's more of just having that instant communication versus what if Sashi doesn't answer, or being able to get in contact with him right away. I think it's just another case of Sashi Brown and this Browns front office being asleep at the wheel at this Garoppolo thing, because I think early on they gave a half-hearted effort to get him in the offseason, and now that it only took a second-round pick, it makes him look even worse because we have three of those in this year's draft.
The Garoppolo trade is something that, obviously, it's frustrating, but I don't think they were going to send him here. I think a theory I agree with, not even a theory, it's kind of happened. I think the Patriots, it was like a pseudo-trade for Brian Hoyer, because it was like, all right, well, we'll trade you Garoppolo, but you got to cut Hoyer, and then we're going to sign Hoyer.
Yeah, I mean, he's familiar with that offense.
So I don't think they were going to send Garoppolo here to the sunken place of quarterbacks.
Siberia.
Yeah, but it's not the point. The point is, it's like, hey, if this was a guy you wanted in the offseason,
go get him.
Even if the Patriots say no, did you at least make a similar offer to San Francisco? We could send them Cody Kessler. We'll cut Cody Kessler right now.
Well, the thing that I don't understand is everything that Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown have told us from the time that they took over is that they've made decisions in lockstep, and that Hugh Jackson came here to solve the quarterback problem. Whether it's RG3, I understand that he has to take the fall for him as well as Cody Kessler, regardless of who made the pick. If you're the front office and you have a coach telling you, I need this guy to win, or I want this guy to become a winning football team, and you fail to be aggressive or make an offer that's worth it, and he only goes for a second round pick, I mean, that just shows right there that the front office and head coaching staff are just not on the same page.
And also, too, say you're Sashi Brown, the team's 0-8, you pitch this plan to Jimmy Haslam, you're fine with being bad, you say, you know what? Let's get this guy for Hugh Jackson. If this guy stinks and Hugh Jackson's high on him and he's the one who wanted the move and Jimmy Haslam knows this, your job's safe. What?
Yeah.
If you have, what do they have, 12 picks or something?
Yep.
If you have 12 picks and you send one, and it's not like you're going to, like, you can land a star anywhere in the draft. But we're talking about the Cleveland Browns and we're treating each draft pick like the gold. I saw someone on our Facebook page comment. It was just writing about, like, oh, what a wild day it was, missing on these trades and all this. And it was, well, we got all these picks. We're going to draft all these playmakers next year. I'm like, did this person just rise from the seas? It's like, what do you mean?
Well, you bring up a good point, and I actually wrote it down here. I mean, just looking at the trade deadline as a whole, I mean, we saw guys like Kelvin Benjamin go for a third and seventh round pick. We got Jamie Collins last year for a third round pick. I mean, T.Y. Hilton was rumored to be available. If you're the Browns in the first round, I think he's got 3 years left on his deal. You have another pick in the first round. What player are you going to draft there that's better than T.Y. Hilton?
Send the Texans pick.
Exactly. You're not going to give up number one for T.Y., but send that Texans pick. You could have sent 2 second rounders to Jimmy Garoppolo and still had every pick available, or your original picks available to you in the draft, or a pick in each of those two rounds, depending on what you give up. I think it's so frustrating that this team is 0-8, and the failure to recognize the fact that this team doesn't have enough talent to win by the front office is inexcusable. It's inexcusable.
I don't think they fail to see that. I think they just don't care this year. I think it's part of their plan, but it's a plan that really doesn't work well because it leads to all this anger. You would need to have a coach who was assured he's here for 5 years, whatever. But even then, you don't want to lose every week.
No, the plan has failed. The plan has completely and utterly failed. This is exactly why tanking doesn't work, because it's different if you tank from the sense that you're a team like the Jets that have serviceable quarterback play and you're winning a few games because you're also developing guys like Robbie Anderson. You have Bilal Powell on that roster. That's a decent defense. It's got some pieces on there, but at the same time, you're winning games. You're keeping that coaching staff intact, and you're not making these players' confidence levels so low that they're just never going to develop into their full potential. Versus the Browns, I mean, you're 1-23. If you're a player that came in last year, you know, you're promised this huge turnaround, and you come in and week out, and you're just flat out beaten by any team because you're simply not good enough to win, and that can't be good for players' confidence.
Another problem too, which is a point I've heard brought up a few times, guys like Myles Garrett, all these top picks, they're not going to re-sign here. If this team continues to do this with coach, like fire coaches or the front office is doing weird stuff, not just Myles Garrett, and he could stay. I'm just saying as an example, top picks who will be coveted by every team will be like, why would I stay here if I don't even know if the coaches are going to be here or who the GM is going to be? I could just go to like New England or like Seattle or somewhere fun.
Well, what happens when So who do we draft in the first round the first year? Corey Coleman, Miles Garrett, Jabril Peppers, David Njoku, and whatever two first rounders we're going to draft this year. What happens when all those guys come up for contracts? You're going to have to – some of those guys are not going to be able to re-sign, and not to mention the fact that the Browns have yet to find a quarterback. And if that guy's Kirk Cousins, which is really the only option at this point unless you're taking a guy at the top of the draft, you're going to have to commit $20 to $30 million a year to a quarterback if you want to be competitive in the NFL.
Especially in today's market, that's just the number it's going to be. But Kirk Cousins is going to warrant a max deal, probably a record deal, just
good.
The way the market works.
Give it to him. And I think that's the way the Browns have to go, I think. I'm not going to give up on DeShone Kizer. I think he's got some intangibles.
We have to at least try.
He's a 21-year-old kid, and I just think he was not ready to be an NFL quarterback, and he wasn't done any favors by the front office or coaching staff. But now seeing how this all unfolded, including the AJ McCarron trade, I have no belief that Hugh Jackson truly wanted to start DeShone Kizer week one. You know, I think desperately they needed a veteran guy back there, and the front office did away with them and most other veterans on this team as well.
I want to talk about the McCarron trade because I feel like there's so much to unravel, and I have some conspiracy theories.
All right, well, what was your initial reaction when you found out that this trade was good? Not that it was denied, but that it was maybe in the works. Or,
well, I got a text from you that said, "Are you seeing this?" And I said, "Uh-oh," because anytime the trade deadline is happening, I get a confusing text. I'm like, I'm just sitting. What's going on? All I saw was the Schefter tweet that said, "Browns had a trade, like fell through. Browns didn't do paperwork or something." And at first I was like, I don't really want McCarron, but I'm kind of confused. I guess I'm just so used to crazy stuff happening where it wasn't that true shock and outrage. It's just like, okay, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I see it was reported earlier in the morning by Mary Kay that's the kind of quarterback. Obviously, Hugh Jackson likes him from his days back in Cincinnati. He was a big advocate for AJ coming out of the draft. But obviously, it was a panic move. You know, for the 49ers trading for Garoppolo and all the outrage from the fans and media about it only being for a second-round pick
and maybe
that the Browns
from ownership.
Have two of. Probably from ownership. You know, you bring in a guy like Hugh Jackson, like I said, that says this is the guy that I want or a guy that I want, and you failed to reach out to the Patriots to execute it. You know, you have all this draft capital. It's got to be used towards something, and you get a guy like – I see a lot of people complain about why would we trade a second-round pick for – an unknown quarterback. Well, you've got to keep taking shots at this position until you hit one. And whether that's trading a second rounder for a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo or taking another first like a top pick again this year and finally committing to the position for more than 2 or 3 years, you've got to keep taking shots. And I have no problem with them even for a guy like AJ McCarron, you know, giving up a second and third round pick, because that's what it's going to take to get a guy that like a quarterback in the division away from a divisional opponent as well, you know, but quarterbacks are going to come at a premium, whether it's draft picks or the money. So you got to pick one.
And there should be no hesitation to use some of the draft capital. I understand not trading the one or number one or number two overall pick. You should never trade that unless it's for, you know, like a superstar. But I just don't understand. I also don't understand the viewpoint of, so personally, I don't think AJ McCarron's that good. If the trade went through, I wouldn't be outraged. I'd say I don't think he's going to be the franchise guy, but I think he could at least play better than what we're seeing. But I never get the view of, well, we shouldn't trade for him or we shouldn't trade for Garoppolo, because then once the draft rolls around, it's like, oh, Darnold and Rosen stink. It's like, I never understand. I feel like people in Cleveland couldn't handle a good quarterback. There'd always be like, ooh, he's doing this flaw. It's like, just let him play.
Oh, it's the Danny Tanner rule. Oh, she has weird earlobes. We don't want her. Like, okay, well, no. You bring up a good point. It's like, no, this city is never going to be happy with any quarterback coming out of the draft until they actually, like, just fall into a quarterback that plays well. They weren't happy with Brian Hoyer. They weren't happy with Brandon Weed. I mean, they're not happy with anybody. So, and myself included, I mean, until you find a guy that you can really just get to stabilize the position. If you look at their last three winning seasons, I think 2002, 2007, and whatever, 2000, whatever, when they were 7-4, they ended up a losing season.
14.
But Yeah, so but all three constants in there are not – it's not that they had elite quarterback play. It's just that they had competent quarterback play. And that's something that we haven't seen from DeShone Kizer, something we haven't seen from any other quarterback on the roster. And if you can get a guy like A.J. McCarron in here that played in a playoff game, I believe, you know, that's experience in there. And I'm pretty sure he's actually won an NFL game too, maybe. But something that these quarterbacks on the roster currently don't have.
He has some age, which is nice. He's a little older. He's – backing up a real quarterback, worked with Hugh Jackson, knows the system at least, because it's unfair to keep doing what Hugh Jackson is doing to DeShone Kizer, and then it's like, all right, Kevin Hogan's going to start. All right, let's put the next least experienced guy on the roster out there. It makes no sense, and someone like McCarron could at least give...
Tied it over.
Yeah.
Tied
win
it over.
Two games. I mean,
yeah, they're trying to draw blood from a stone right now in terms of like the offense, trying to pull offensive talent from these guys that really just don't have it. And at some point, you've just got to shoot your shot. And that's something this front office has continually bypassed, whether it's Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, or even Mitchell Trubisky at the top of the draft. Like, at some point, you've got to shoot your shot. You got to attach yourself to one quarterback, and you can't keep going around trying to get guys at a discount rate or... Like I said, at some point you're going to have to pay a premium for a quarterback to get a quarterback, and that's the only way you're going to be competitive in the NFL. So going back to this McCarron trade, you mentioned the mishap and the paperwork. Let's dig into that a little bit. What happened?
So when all that stuff was happening, I was very careful to you know, kind of wait to write about it because it kept changing. But kind of the... what it seems to be actually happened, at least what Mary Kay Cabot reported after she updated it 8 times, and I'm not saying this against her, I'm saying it because I'm sure she was like, wait, what? And they're like, Bengals are like, we never got paperwork. And the Browns are like, oh, we sent you paperwork, and it was like mailed.
But it's like a fantasy football draft when you get cold feet and you're like, maybe I won't hit this accept button real
quick. So what
quick,
it seems
know?
Happened is that Sashi Brown had his assistant send an email to the person he was... So Sashi Brown was making a trade, and instead of Sashi Brown sending an email, which would take 2 seconds, he had his assistant send it, and obviously the Bengals are rushing against the clock with 5 minutes to spare trying to get this trade submitted. But all the Browns had to do was CC the NFL on the email, and the trade would have been fine. Someone working with the NFL would have went, oh, yep, that's all I would have done.
This happens... I made like 3 trades in one fantasy football league, and that's the exact process that a fantasy football league follows. And if that's the same thing in the NFL, it took me 2 seconds once we agreed on it because I wanted to do the deal, shot it over immediately. Takes 3 seconds. And the fact that the Browns were notified that they wanted to do it at 3:54, and I don't know if this goes to how they execute trades all the time and they were caught under the wire or what, but I mean, for the front office to take the coaching staff's input and say, okay, we're going to go get you this A.J. McCarron for a second and third round pick, whether they think that's too much to give up or not, for them to essentially sabotage the deal and have it not go through and then appeal it and be like, oh, we tried everything we could. You know, that's kind of how it comes off to people in the public, you know, given the fact that we already know there's discontent between the front office and head coach or coaching staff.
And the frustrating thing is, if they were just transparent and said we messed up or something, not an issue. But
I haven't heard.
But it's just like Browns. It's like sources from the Browns say that they did the right thing. Blah blah blah. It's like, well, clearly someone messed up. The Bengals obviously wanted to make this trade if they were rushing against the clock to do it. My conspiracy theory, really quick, is that Sashi Brown was like, okay, send an email over, knowing that it may not go through. May get messed up, and then he sent the appeal in because he had to.
You want to cover his tracks.
I want to see Hugh Jackson's face when he was told the trade didn't go through.
Well, we saw what happened with, like, Jimmy Haslam was irate, I guess, on Tuesday when that happened, and D. Haslam was also, you know,
yeah,
quote, nuclear from pro Football Talk towards the front office, so...
I read that article. I like that. It's like she was, quote, nuclear. I'm like, what does that mean?
I remember reading an article, I think early on, and it was either this year or last year, that D. Haslam was going to be more involved, and she's actually more, I would say, I'm trying to think of the word, maybe professional, but the sense that I got from the article was that people sit up straighter when she's in the room. I think maybe she's the one that you have to impress more so than Jimmy, because she's more of the hard-nosed businesswoman that it's not going to take, you know, she's not going to take shit from anybody.
And she knows how to run a major business, and then she sees this stuff happen. They can't even trade for a backup quarterback.
When they brought in Hugh for his quarterback experience in their front office that they just wanted to keep as continuity, they just completely put the nix on it. And it's like, how much farther is this franchise going to descend into the pit of misery? Dilly dilly. How much farther are they going to keep going downward before they truly hit rock bottom? And I want to say that this is rock bottom because there's no coming back from this. But we thought that when Hugh Jackson was hired, and now we're sitting here with one win in the last 45 games, or four wins in the last 45 games,
and like,
one win in the last 24. And it's like, I mean, where do the Browns go from here, Steven?
I think the term rock bottom has to be relative, because it's different.
It's been relative.
It's different for the Browns, because most rock bottom is, we had playoff hopes this year. It's like the Giants. We had a bad year. Rock bottom. We'll get better. The Browns, it's like, all right, well, we're 0-16, and we fired our coach and our GM, and we drafted Sam Darnold, who actually decided to stay in school for another year. It's just this trade, whether you like McCarron or not, I think it's a good example of just how much of a mess this is. Mm-hmm. And this group has made trades. Are you telling me that every trade they do, Sashi Brown has his assistant send emails to people? Because why didn't they just call the Bengals, say, hey, just send an email over? It's so easy. This is just like anything. You just send an email over.
What I heard from Chris Landry is that the Browns do this, of Landry Football, by the way, the Browns do this trade that way all the time. So it's not, I mean, it's kind of an archaic way to do it, but again, that's not an excuse for you to not get a trade done.
Call and check that they got the email.
It's so easy. Yeah, it's so easy. I mean, just looking at so far what we've been told from Hugh Jackson's press conferences and Sashi Brown's press conferences is, I mean, these guys have been lying to us the whole time. We're working together in lockstep. We've got this. You know, they've passed on Carson Wentz because there's a guy next year that they'll draft. And that's one thing that I have a problem with, is I hear a lot of, well, let's wait for next year and we'll draft a quarterback then. Like, now look at Sam Darnold is going back to school. A lot of people question Josh Rosen's commitment to football.
And just his overall skill.
Josh Allen, very raw, maybe not worth a top overall pick. You know, you never know what the future holds. And the fact that the Browns continuously want to put it off because they don't want to, you know, shoot their shot is completely laughable at this point. How many times? The biggest discrepancy I see is that the Titans and the Browns were at the first and second picks in 2015. Yeah, 2015 or the 2016 draft. The Titans are now a playoff team, or like close to it. You know, they're the next up and coming playoff team, versus the Browns, who are now the laughingstock of the league, or continue to be the laughingstock of the league. And when you take a quarterback that high, you've at least made your decision for the next 2 or 3 years that that's our guy, until he proves you otherwise. And who knows, maybe you might find a freaking franchise quarterback that'll stick around, or that might play all 16 games. You know, it's a wonder. It's crazy to think that the Browns just have never taken a quarterback at the top of the draft or anywhere close since Tim Couch. Nothing past pick 22, which is completely absurd.
I see it as if we don't go all in on a quarterback, that we can't, like, it's almost just like saving themselves where they don't want to bust. But I mean, if you take Carson Wentz number two and he's not good, it's not like that was a reach.
Well, I think what this is finally proven, and I go back and forth with this with my buddy all the time who works at Indiana. He thinks that you need to build the team around the quarterback position. And from day one, I've been telling him that you got to find a quarterback first, because you can't develop talent around. And as we've seen it, you know, you can't win games with inept quarterback play, which is what we've been seeing from the Browns in the last 3, 4, 5, 6, however many seasons. You look at he's a Bears fan, so I use it against him all the time. The Bears drafted Trubisky, didn't ask him to do too much, pounded the run, utilized their defense, and actually won a few games, and now probably saved their coaching staff and front office's job, because while they have more moves to make, and it's a good start, it's not finished yet, but they're going in the right direction. And the Browns did the opposite approach, continue to put off drafting a quarterback and putting emphasis on that position, and now we're looking at another regime change, and probably quarterbacks at the top of the draft are looking, maybe going back to school is not such a bad thing at this point.
And they got the Browns roster. I mean, it's a second round pick from this year. These are the quarterbacks. And you got Cody Kessler third round. And then Kevin Hogan was a fifth round by the Chiefs. It's like, why can't we just take a guy in the top?
Yeah. I mean, the Panthers took Jimmy Clausen in the second round, turn around the next year and draft Cam Newton. So I have no problem if that's what their strategy is, but and it's not like the Browns, like, it's not like Deshaun Watson went number one and the Browns traded out of that pick. Like, or with Carson Wentz, like, he went number two and they were at number five and, like, could have traded up but didn't. They had those guys. And that's where I think a lot of the frustration stems from, is because they had those guys at their fingertips. Their own evaluations were not as such to say that we should draft this guy. Same with Deshaun Watson. Had him there at 12. Hugh Jackson obviously liked him. And for the front office, I mean, it just looks more and more like the front office is trying to undercut the coaching staff and give the coaching staff truly has nothing to work with.
I agree. And there's even more to talk about. I want to bring it up before we go too far off the deep end and yell at each other about how much we dislike the front office. Josh Gordon, one of our DEFCON level reasons to do an emergency podcast, reinstated conditionally. Could play December 3rd, I believe, in L.A.
against the
Chargers.
Which they better keep him in the hotel room forever in L.A.
Of course, his first game back is in L.A.
But the only thing worse would be, like, at a bar. Like, to him tailgating before the game, like, somewhere else, you know.
Do you think the Browns will cut him before that he can return?
I hope not. I mean, I think we talked about it before. Like, it's not good for the culture, but at this point, there's no culture left anymore. This is over. The plan has failed. I understand that they said they want 5 years, but you don't get 5 years in the NFL. We should have realized that early on. At this point, the Browns and Josh Gordon need each other. So whether he wants to play here or not, he's going to be here for 2 years, and the Browns have no wide receivers. Like, I'm really curious who do you think on the depth chart that they would cut to make room for Josh Gordon? Because I know that they have such a strong wide receiver room right now that I'm curious who you would think would be the odd man out if Josh Gordon comes on the active roster.
They're probably going to cut Britt.
they should have cut. And that's the other thing, too, is if you still employ Kenny Britt for all the BS that he's done this year, you can throw Josh Gordon in that room. It's no problem, because as soon as the new regime takes over, I say 90% of these guys that are probably gone next year.
At least Josh Gordon's humble now. Kenny Britt is like, London, hate London.
I think it's important for both sides to really, even if they don't, there is a separation coming at some point. I think it's really important for them to at least make it work for the time being, or make it work until the kids graduate high school, and then we'll go from there, you know?
Yeah, the team is so bad right now. I understand the not trusting Gordon, but even the potential of him playing at least gives us something to watch. Because his team's so bad, it's like, oh, we'll just cut him. It's like, please, I would rather have him go out there, maybe fail, than just cut him, because at least I could watch the game and be like, oh, well, they're probably going to get blown out again, but at least I can see how Josh Gordon does.
Yeah, I mean, even if he's running the wrong routes, just send him on a fly route the whole time. He's bound to get open some way. I mean, throw the ball up to him. We saw what he did with RG3 in the preseason, and I think that's part of the reason why, you know, there's so much still mystery behind or having him back on the field, what he can do for a football team. Because if he was out of football, like a guy like Justin Blackmon, your expectations would be a little bit lower, versus you've seen what he can do even coming off of another suspension, you know, for those preseason games. And he's just taking balls out of the air and really doing what no wide receiver is capable of doing on the Browns right now.
The good news is, and it made me laugh, was that he was reinstated right after the trade deadline.
Thank God.
It's almost like Roger Goodell was like, I'm not going to let the Browns trade Josh Gordon. He's playing for the Browns. Like a sly move to help the Browns save themselves.
I mean, I'm hoping more information comes out. I love the juicy stuff about what the coaching staff saying about the front office, because at this point, like I said, this is a failed experiment. If anything, I think the coaching staff may salvage their jobs, but if you're going to bring in a new GM, odds are he's going to want his own guy anyway. But after, depending on what truly happened with that AJ McCarron deal, if Sashi did sabotage it, that's a fireable offense.
The funny thing is, all this crazy off the field stuff really deflects from some of the bad decisions Hugh Jackson's made, the coaching staff in general. It almost helps them that all this crazy stuff is happening, because you have Hugh Jackson making just some bad game management.
Don't you think that he's making some of those decisions, though, because he's put in that position by the lack of talent?
I don't know. I think his handling of the quarterbacks has been just awful.
But don't you think that that's part of the fact that he's just trying to get a win? Like, as a coach, you know that you have to win in the NFL. That's the most important thing, no matter how it gets done. The Bears ran the ball 55 times in one game, and they won the game. Mitch would pass for 7 attempts, and they won the game. I don't care how it gets done. You need to win a game. So I think Hugh Jackson's decisions, yes, they have been, some of them have been complete head scratchers. But at some point, you've also got to make something work. And if that might change your game plan if you had better talent on the field in order to execute.
Yeah, I don't think any Hugh Jackson's decisions are fireable. I just think it's interesting that, you know, an 0-8 coach might hold leverage over his front office because of the crazy stuff they're doing.
Well, you noticed in his press conferences, too, he's basically undercutting them. But I think it's because they're undercutting him. Again, I don't think Hugh Jackson has made the best decisions. But I can't say that he's a bad coach because he has been given nothing to work with. Nothing. And we signed a bunch of offensive linemen in the offseason.
They're not blocking for anyone good.
You don't have a good quarterback. You don't have a good running back. You have no good wide receiver, so I really don't know what was expected this year outside of we didn't expect 0-8, that's for sure.
True.
I also think the funny thing, too, is I think the emergency podcast we said we'd have to have, or we expected them to be fired after like an embarrassing game against the Vikings versus now coming home and recouping from that trip only to have the trade deadline cause complete mayhem. And now, essentially, will probably cost them their job. So it's definitely been a crazy last 2 days.
And Josh Gordon's back.
So, well, I think that just about does it for us. We pretty much talked about everything that's going on. I'm sure there'll be more to come. And if we have to do another emergency podcast, that means something absolutely crazy has happened. But I'm Andrew Seipt. For Steven Kubica, this is the Dog Pound Daily Podcast, signing off.